Welcome to Two Players, One Console, the only podcast where three people talk about video games in a podcast that refers to two people. I think we're the only ones.
Yeah, I think we are.
So, as I said, there are three of us. We'll just kind of start telling a little bit about ourselves to introduce, who we are, because hopefully you're going to stick with us for a long time to hear about video games. I am host number one, I guess. So there's no particular order. Mm-hmm. But I am Jake Bentley, insurance person by day, stand-up comedian by four times a year at this point. I mean, I used to do it a lot more, but it's hard. So
it's hard to do stand-up during a pandemic.
I don't have a hard time doing stand-up comedy. What I have a hard time doing is convincing myself to leave the house.
Yeah.
I understand that.
It was a lot easier before I had two kids, but now it's just like, ugh. I'm like, I have to get up and put on pants to go do that.
Right.
When I can always just sit home and enjoy my video games.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much here for the occasional jokes and smartassery. Also because I had podcasting equipment, so, fuck it. We're going to swear on this podcast too.
Cool.
Good. I like it.
Yeah. You guys cool with that?
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely.
Cool. Let's kick it over to Jesse.
Yeah, I'm Jesse Manime. I am a CNC machinist by day and a avid video gamer and upcoming father by everything else. That's all I do.
And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Congrats, by the way.
Yeah, thank you, man. I'm stoked.
I know I've asked you this like four times, but you don't know the flavor yet, right?
No. Yeah. We did like the blood test twice and it came back inconclusive, yeah.
You know, as long as you're not choosing to be that person who's like, we don't want to know the gender. No. Like, those people are the worst.
No, we're doing a reveal at an upcoming date. I can't say on the air, but,
Right,
we're
right.
Stoked. Yeah, we're doing the ultrasound and everything. So I got my little second player coming pretty soon.
That's so cool.
Yeah, man. Can't wait. Everyone's like, oh, you're not going to have time for video games. I'm like, oh,
no, bullshit.
Yeah. Time for video That's games. What I say in my head.
You're going to be like, busy raising them in each generation as it grew.
You know who doesn't have time for video games? The people who video games weren't important for in exactly. the meantime.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's like saying you're not going to be into sports once you have a kid.
Right.
Well, if sports are your thing, yes, you are.
Yeah, if you like it, you like it. You enjoy it, you know?
Listen, I have two kids. I'm still very much doing video games. And the secret to it is for the kids to have a mom.
Yeah.
She can do all the changing the diaper shit and everything like that.
That's great.
Shout out to my lovely wife, Bryn. Thank you for doing everything so that I can play video games and record obnoxious podcasts with my friends. And lastly, our third player here. How are you doing, Dean?
Doing good. My name is Dean, and I'm, I don't know.
He's single. Yeah. He likes horseback riding.
I'm a Taurus.
He's a bull. Yeah. He's a Chicago bull. That's what you were going to say, right?
How did you know?
He is like Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
But shorter.
I'm like NBA Jam on Sega Genesis.
Yeah. That's a good game.
That's a good pickup line for...
Because I'm on fire! I just got the tournament version of that.
It was such a good game.
So, today, we're going to talk about a little game called Metal Gear Solid. I'm sure some of you have played it out there. It was an easy decision to do this game. I know Jesse has some huge connections with the game. We've all played it. For me, the biggest thing about this is like we hear all the time about how like video games are an art, right? But like that wasn't always the case, you know. Like people are like video games are an art, but like Donkey Kong wasn't art, you know. Like
it was fun,
right? Yeah. You know, at some point they transitioned from being kind of these stupid little time wasters to being an art form. And in my opinion, Metal Gear Solid is kind of one of our earliest examples of video game being art.
It was like the first game that, like, I didn't have access to a lot of like NES and Sega stuff, so it was like the first game where I was like, whoa, like, it's like a movie watching, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, I'm really, in a movie right now. And although I was too young to understand the upcoming.
It was
upcoming.
Aimed to be cinematic. It was so deep. And I also think it inspired, it's a whole genre of gaming. Like, you didn't see a lot of, like, Splinter Cell or anything like that coming to play until after Metal Gear Solid for PS1.
It's funny now how they all, like, recognize and link with each other now. Like, you know,
yeah,
when, like, anniversaries come up, it's always like, Sam Fisher here. Solid Snake, 15 years old today. You know what I mean? Stuff right, like that. Like, the companies just have this new...
Even on neutral. Random times, like, there's the people who make it are so passionate about it. David Hayter, who does the voice of Snake, he says regularly, and even said recently, he wants to return to the franchise. He wants them to continue it.
Yeah, he'll, like, be doing interviews and just be talking normal and then, like, say one word, like, crab battle. And, like, in the middle of everything. That guy's awesome.
He's, you know what I think was the amazing thing about Metal Gear Solid 2? Metal Gear Solid, comma, T-O-O.
Yeah. Thought about that, too, when you said it.
You know, one of the things I think it did so well, aside from giving us one of the first cinematic gaming experiences, but it delivered it so well.
Oh, my God.
I mean, if let's be honest, if we saw Metal Gear Solid as a movie... before we saw it as a game, I don't know if it would have hit as well.
Oh, you
know?
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, a lot of the story points were fucking ridiculous.
Dude.
Well, that's one thing that's interesting. It gets so deep and crazy, but at the same time, the way it's presented is almost like a real-world scenario.
Right.
And I think that adds such a intensity to it, even for a game of its graphics from, you know, being in the 90s.
Yeah.
All the games are so big, too, that we're, like, literally, this is the one we're going to talk about today. Like, if we sat here and talked about everything, it would be like, you know, you got 48 hours?
Yeah, yeah, this could easily be.
And that's just one game out of a ton. The original came out in 1987, and it was just called Metal Gear.
Yeah.
Right.
That lone guy on the cover holding the gun.
I'm actually going to kind of lean on you guys for though, because I did not play those first two on the original NES.
I only played them a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't do much. They're very, very tough.
Playing a lot lately.
Yeah, Jesse, you're one of the. Good. Jesse, you're one of like the six people on Earth who's played them and beat them. Right?
Oh my God. It's crazy too because I didn't play it until like the HD collection came out with the MSX versions of from. You know.
Which includes both the 1987 Metal Gear and 1990 Snake's Revenge, which is Metal Gear Solid 2, Solid Snake.
Yeah. Oh, man. Those games are so hard. I almost wish they could remake them, like, today, just, that, like, on a whole new engine.
That's something that's so interesting, though. A lot of games from, you know, early 90s, late 80s, and all that, from that era of its of gaming history, it just seems like there was such a severe level of difficulty, but it wasn't, like... Like, it didn't annoy you. It just made you more, like, into it. You're like, oh, I'm going to figure this out. I'm going to find a way to make this work. I'm going to, you know, get past this, whatever.
You had to use your head.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? It would just dig you into it strategically, like, when you're playing.
So maybe for those of you who aren't maybe as familiar with the game, just kind of a quick, you know... I looked up some stuff on the development of the game. So apparently the first Metal Gear was actually intended to be an action game that featured modern military combat.
Hmm.
So, I mean, kind of some forward thinking there, you know, what's become like the Call of Duties. You know, those things have been here. It seems like that was kind of the mindset, even going back to the 80s.
Well, I think another thing to point out, too, though, is it was also, to my personal knowledge, one of the first big third-person shooters.
Right. I guess the hang-up, though, was the hardware limited the number of bullets and enemies that you could have on screen, and they kind of felt impeded by the combat part of it.
Yeah.
So it looks like Hideo Kojima, the maker of the game, altered it to focus on an escaping prisoner. In a series of articles written for the official PlayStation 2 magazine, Kojima identified several Hollywood films as the primary sources of inspiration for storylines and gameplay. Specifically, the James Bond series was a big influencer. It's not mentioned here, but I mean, like Snake Plissken from Escape from New York. Yep. Like that's
kind of where the name came from,
right? And I'm so glad that they went that way.
They've commented on it too. I believe it was the original Metal Gear Solid for PS1 where they actually used, or was it that or PS?
They used it for Metal Gear Solid 2: Sons of Liberty
when he was going by and Iroquois.
Iroquois Plissken, Lieutenant Junior Grade. I'm to meet you, sir.
I love how you have this stuff memorized.
Oh yeah,
this is why you're the best person to do this.
I have all the quotes. Like I have a friend Jovan, and I'll just call him up and be like, "The only thing that could stand up to another Metal Gear is, of course, another Metal Gear," and then just hang up the phone.
I want you to start doing that to places that, like, not your friends.
Yeah, yeah. Just call random stores. Like, the shift in the balance of power of Metal Gear is obsolete.
They're just like, what? This is a Domino's.
Yeah.
Pepperoni pizza. Just, like, call up your senator.
Yeah. Kept you waiting, huh?
You know,
so many good quotes.
A big thing about the game is they wanted it to revolve around nuclear weapon inspections. And in later games, they actually had it planned in Iraq and Iran, but took it out because it hit a little too close to home. But, you know, I'm really glad they went with Snake Plissken as kind of a thing for it. Like, Japanese games, and this is one of the hardest things for me to get into, like your Final Fantasies and stuff like that, is there tends to be the archetype of the hero in Japan tends to be more effeminate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And for me, I need to be able to kind of like, you know, wear my character as a pair of literary pants.
Yeah.
You know, I need to like slip those on and like, that's me. And I don't want to be, you know, a 5'6". You know,
bleached hair, spiked,
right? And
spins, and when they say stuff and twirls their fingers,
beautiful big
so
cool
animated,
eyes.
Right? And I mean, if you're out there and like that's what you want to play, like, great, good for you. You know, like all the power to you. It's I have trouble,
well, especially for a game like of a franchise like this where it's supposed to be more of a serious, intense thing. Like, you can't kind of take such a light perspective on it. Like, it's like that kind of thing could be fitting for so many things. Like, to me, I personally see like the Devil May Cry franchise. I see that as a very anime style thing, and I think it's fitting.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's just such a, I don't know. It's, you're right though. They don't often do that with their. With their heroes.
Not a lot of like,
they're not very
gritty.
Like,
tough,
serious.
Dark.
Yeah, and I mean, not to go too much into Metal Gear Solid 2, because we will absolutely do an episode of that game. That game will get its own episode down the road. But you know, I mean, when they did do Metal Gear Solid 2 and they brought Raiden in, I think that was a big source of backlash.
Oh my god, I still remember. The way I felt when I first saw him. I'm like, what?
Same.
Like, I only got to play for Snake for 45 minutes? That's crazy. And then after a while, I got... I played those games so young that, like, I almost didn't understand what I was looking at. Or, like, what was the information coming at me until, like, later. Because, I mean, I started playing in 98. That came out. So, I mean, I'm 32 now. I'm bad at math, but... I was in my early teens, you know? 12, 13. So I mean, I kind of got it, but I didn't. It took a while, but yeah.
Yeah, I remember being a teenager, and we'd go and play that game, and we'd try doing all the ridiculous stuff, like trying to get Meryl pantsless, and all the little Easter eggs that we would find.
That's actually a good kind of transition, because we can start talking a little bit about you know, some of the gameplay on Metal Gear Solid. Mm. I know it was really tough for me. To transition to that game. I didn't think it was a game I was going to stick with because my play style in everything, run in and hit shit.
Yeah.
You know? The style of third person that it is, too, is very difficult, and even to this day is kind of not very common. Right. Like, it's not like it follows him directly where, like, the camera spins when you turn. Like, it's literally just an aerial view as you roam around.
And the cameras automatically adjust according to where your position is.
So aiming and all that when you're shooting and in battle, like, it's so much more difficult.
I mean, it was getting used to. It was literally the first draft of these type of games, you know? This is where other games actually learned to... you know, to work on the mechanics.
Like this, the blueprint.
Right. Yeah, yeah. This was the ground floor that they had to work on.
Yeah.
You know, I thought they did a really good job of kind of introducing the concept of stealth too, especially when you get into, you know, Shadow Moses, you know, when you're on the outside of it and, you know, they kind of walk you through, you know, choking people out. Yeah. And,
'cause that first one where you're, where you come out of the water, like, you take the capsule in, and you know what I mean? You come up, and you come out. There's only two guys there, so if you get caught, only those two guys are going to come. So you can literally just blitz through that. But then after that, it's when you get caught, they just keep coming. Like, there's no... You can't just blitz through it. I mean, you could probably, but you know what I mean? You just go through the door, and then whatever.
Some areas will go on lockdown, though. I remember there's one or two areas that would happen to me in the game, and I would just get stuck in there and have to fight over and over. Yep, the gas room.
That's right after you beat Vulcan Raven in the tank, but right before then, there's lasers, and Meryl tells you, like, oh, be careful, and you have to smoke a cigarette to see where the lasers are. You get caught in there, you're dead.
Am I the only one to... I know I'm not. I'm just going to ask this for the sake of bringing it up, just so we can talk about it. Am I the only one who absolutely loved the noises that they made when getting choked out?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Those were so great.
Because I would, like... Could you yoke them up, and then you just hit the buttons. I'd be like...
I would love to be in the recording booth when they just brought that guy in and like, listen, your character is about to get choked out right now. Just make the noise that you think would happen if you were choked out. Yeah. Oh yeah, I got this.
There's no after either. There's no like breathe out or anything. It's just
You know this isn't a sexual choking, right?
It's like, oh man. It's funny, too, how, like, we'll talk about it in the future episodes, but they took that choke and then made this whole CQC thing later on for Metal Gear 3 and 4. And it's just ways to disarm your opponent, or enemy, not opponent. I've been playing a lot of WWE.
I thought that was really good, too, and that makes me feel like that was probably closer to what they aimed for in the first game that they had to change. Because you said they kind of wanted that more combat, but they had to change it a little.
Yeah.
It makes me think of what ideas that they had for that game that they either didn't have the space or some, like, I know this is kind of way off, but Tony Hawk. They had the idea, I think, by the first or second game to take you off the board. But they just left it because
it was
the feature
they
wanted.
Game.
It's the feature that they wanted to put in later. You know what I mean? To save it so they had new content for when they came out with a new IP. Or... Yeah. But it's like, I always wonder what ideas, you know, were originally meant for that game that they just put in later.
Actually, one thing Dean brought up, too, that I wanted to, you know, I think, as far as I know, you would probably know better than me, Jesse, but as far as I know, I think this is the earliest Easter egg in the game where you're crawling through the vents, and at one point you can look down and see Meryl, and she's doing push-ups. At that point, or
sit-ups,
is it the sit-ups?
Yeah, sit-ups.
So if you...
The elbow ones where you, like, go back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the, like the crunches, knees, the twisting, yeah. So you can keep going in and out of the vent. You go all the way back, you get out of the vent, you go back in, and she'll be doing each exercise three times.
Yeah.
And then after she cycles through all of her exercises, you go back in there, and she's doing it without pants.
Yes. Yep.
That's amazing.
I want to know the mindset and the thought process that led to...
Well, that's not even the craziest thing that's similar, though. There's something not long after that in the game where a guard gets beaten up and you steal his clothes.
Oh, Yeah.
You know more about this one.
So, yeah, so when you do that and you, like, go through and you talk to the DARPA chief, I actually discovered this in a Burger... I actually first played the game on a Burger King demo. That's when, like, you know, fast food restaurants had video game shit like that, you know?
Right.
But, yeah, so the guard would get attacked and you would do the thing and the chief would die and you'd shoot everybody with marrow. If you turned around, there was a thing where if you laid down next to the guy who's butt naked and you took the scope and you went all the way in, you could see the full layout of him, like
his ass and everything. They blur it out.
Oh, wow.
But if you do that and you look close and with the camera and all that, you could actually see through the blur.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious that they actually made him a character later on in this
too. Yep, Johnny.
Yeah.
Having the stomach problems throughout the entire series.
Right.
I think if I remember correctly, he was actually based on somebody who worked on the game, too. I read that somewhere. I don't know how true it is.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't hear about
just
that.
Like, but... you know what? Phil shits himself all the time. Yeah. Let's put that in the game.
Yeah, we'll just name him Johnny so he doesn't get pissed off. But I thought that was so good, though. It's like they gave what could have been like a meaningless character to that story that no one could have ever known and like made something out of him. And it turns out that it was because he did.
I think that's one thing that made helped make the franchise so good, though. Like, not only was it so unique and cinematic, like it was such a big step for gaming, but there was also so many Easter eggs and so many things that they carried over and just fall into this big long connecting story that's just so in depth. It's like, it's amazing.
You know about the first time you meet Johnny or see Johnny is when you're actually in those vents. If you turn that way, there's like another vent later,
right.
And you see him and he goes, "Oh, that damn witch, I caught a cold. I hate Alaska." You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's so good. Just
right. And we mentioned the DARPA chief, so you kind of get through the fence, and you meet that first character who I think it was really brilliant the way they did it. It actually, like, in a way, it's your first boss fight.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and you don't even know it.
You don't even know it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I almost said the DARPA chief in quotations with my hands. It's like, because it's not really him, but it is him. Decoy Octopus.
And I you don't know that till the end of the game, you know, and it's brilliant how you kind of reach the climax of the game and they're like, "Oh, hey, remember this thing that happened like way at the beginning before you had any fucking clue as to what you were doing or what any of this was?"
Raven tells you, the guy that you beat in the tank, you beat him again with the chain thing.
Oh,
and
he goes,
"The man you saw die right before your eyes, that was not the DARPA chief." And Snake is still like, "What?" You know, he didn't get it until, I'll probably remember after, but yeah, I think it was right after you beat Raven. Like,
for
really
the second
beat him.
Time?
God, he's like one of my favorite characters.
Vulcan. Yeah, I mean, even that first boss fight with him is fantastic, too.
So good. It wasn't just like a point and shoot, like you had to take your grenade and throw it, but you had to aim it at a moving target. Like, it's not like playing Frogger. You know, it's
right
trying to throw a ball into a hole.
Not only was the story so unique too. I mean, there were no mechanics in games like this before. There was you mentioned having to use your cigarette to puff at the lasers to not trip them, like no video game did that before.
There was even like hidden stuff, like when you have to fight Psycho Mantis. Like,
right.
You'd switch to player two for your controller plug-in, and he wouldn't be able to affect you.
It's funny because recently I got the, like, big PlayStation, like the original one, and I was playing that game, and I had a memory card that someone gave me, like, a bunch of PS2 games. Long story short, there was a PS1 memory card in there. I didn't take anything off of it. I just plugged it in and used the save file. He had Castlevania in there. So he goes, "Castlevania, you, like..." Or says something like that, and I, like, completely forgot about it. I remember it, like, blew me away. It was, like, playing that for the first time all over again. Because there's no Google, YouTube. Like, so when you first get to that Psycho Mantis thing, and you're, like, shooting this guy, and nothing's happening, you can't just, like, I could pick up my cell phone right now and look up, like, how to do that. There's just, there was only word of mouth, or... I have the game right in front of me here.
Yeah, or just...
Let me see.
Or just, you know, figuring it out for yourself.
Well, you can order a copy of the strategy guide here, the official handbook, but there's no website for it because there's no internet. I think there was, but not.
That was another thing, too, though. They actually came with full manuals for the games where they would explain a lot of information.
Konami Game Hint and Tip Line, 1-900-896-HINT.
Oh, yeah, when you had to spend the $9.99 a minute because...
Yeah.
You know, you're in a great era where, like, video games are like, you know what? This works well for porn, so...
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's great. It's still continuing with streamers, too.
I mean, even you had to think a lot on your feet with this game.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot who it was. Maybe it was Meryl when you had to call Meryl for the first time, and guess what her codex was. And they it was actually the only place they tell you is on the game itself.
Yeah.
It's on the back of the CD, and if you don't pick up on the subtle hints for long enough, the game actually basically calls you a dumbass, breaks the fourth wall, and says, pick up the friggin' CD case and look at the back, you jabroni. I think they called me a jabroni. I may be misremembering that, but I am 99% sure the colonel raised his eyebrow, called me a jabroni.
I convinced my parents to let me rent this game
people's elbow.
Before I owned it. It was like a 3-day rental. I just
that
got
is
a
not
PlayStation.
Enough time.
No, at all. And when I got to that part,
like, damn.
They don't give you the actual game. It's just Blockbuster with like the rating on the back. So I turned it over and I'm like, oh. So I literally I got lucky. I started at 140 even and just started calling every single one. And luckily, the 15th one, it worked. But I was like, I remember I returned it. I'm like, there's a number, 140-15. I wrote it on the back with a Sharpie. Yeah.
And good God, Jesse.
And they were just like, they didn't even really get mad. They were like, oh, okay, that's useful, but thanks. And I, like, remember that day. It's so weird. I bought Metal Gear Solid 3 when it got launched. I bought it at Blockbuster. Like, I had no idea they ever just randomly sold games, too.
Yeah.
Like, I remember going there, and he cut the box open and, like, took it out of the box, and I brought it home. I was like, oh. I've been going to EB Games or Electronics Boutique.
Heading over to Babbage's.
Yeah.
For those remember Funko Land?
The South.
Oh, yeah. We actually, you can't see it now, but we have the two NES Metal Gear and Snake's Revenge here. They were in Funko Land boxes, but I switched them to them. Yeah.
That's
hear it.
Them right there and nice NES game cartridge cases sliding.
In the
little sleeves for them.
In the original Nintendo condoms.
Yes.
I have the manual for the first one. Someone gave that to me. It's like, I can't find them complete yet.
So trying to kind of go through in order. So, yeah. Vulcan Raven was the first boss, right?
Ocelot
was the first boss. Yeah. Okay, so Ocelot, when you went down to the basement, I think you had to C4 the wall, right?
Yeah, you do it, like, 3-4 times before you get to him?
Right.
Yeah.
And then it's Raven, and then Sniper Wolf? Am I right?
No.
Let's go through and talk about like the individual boss fights because they were all so, they were all so unique. So Ocelot, if I remember correctly, there was I forgot who the guy was.
President Baker, the president of Arms Tech,
and
who
that's
was
why
developing.
You're here.
Yeah, he was the main guy. Like he was the president. He was the guy that. Like, put the whole Metal Gear thing into motion. Like, Otacon is the one that he hired to design it, I believe. But, yeah, that's who you're going there to save. That's your second contact after the DARPA chief dies.
Right.
You go down and
Ocelot was such a cool villain, too. Straight out of, like, the spaghetti westerns.
Yeah.
You know, he's the old, like, Clint Eastwood type.
I really liked the style of the battle, too.
Yeah,
I thought it was fitting to that style because you're just chasing them around, shooting at them, but the angles that they give you with the pillars and the whole like the shape of the room and everything,
it blew my mind
really
when he ricocheted a bullet off the wall and it hit me
with the six shooter.
Yeah, the first time. Yeah, I like that. And like, I think he's like, besides the Patriots, he's the longest running villain.
Yeah.
You don't rid of him until the fourth game. And in the series, it's like at the end.
Yeah. And then, crazy. So at the end of that boss fight, so there's C4 placed all throughout the level. Yeah. And then when you do finally beat him, that's actually where we're introduced to, the ninja.
Yep. I'm looking it up right now because I forgot myself.
And Ocelot actually gets his hand cut off, by the cyborg ninja at the end of that fight. And kind of like what we said before, I mean, that one moment where he gets his hand cut off is like the catalyst for the next three games.
Yeah, that's why everything happens the way it happens after that. Like, so good.
Yeah, just the minuscule use of this little thing that seemingly should have no impact.
Yeah.
You know, other than just prematurely ending a boss fight, ends up being the catalyst for the series going forward. It's genius. It's brilliant.
So good. And I like what they did in the Twin Snakes. They kind of revamped that scene because they probably had like the technology to do it, which I thought was cool.
I actually never played Twin Snakes, so how did they do it?
It is amazing. It's my personal favorite.
It's crazy. I've only beaten that game like 3 or 4 times because I had it and then it got stolen and then I couldn't find it forever. But yeah, something like, I gotta look it up, but Snake gets something big thrown at him, like, by the ninja, or, like, this big, I can't remember, but it's cool. Snake, like, dodges this big stone that the ninja throws at him, I think, or something like that.
I did read
I'm getting these conflicting thoughts of the ninja cutting the thing, but that's why I need to play that again. I just got a CRT TV, like, a legit one. For the GameCube, because when I play on the flat screens, like, here's the thing about retro games I learned, just take that size, and, like, you know, you do full screen, just make it smaller, like Letterbox or 16:9, and it will, like, change the output. But, yeah, I can't remember.
I do remember there was, I read a thing where it was talking about how when they made Twin Snakes, Kojima actually said that he wanted the cinematics to be a little more exaggerated, which I think is true. From what I remember, like, they were like almost campy with the way they let their dialogue out, the way they spoke and acted, but it was so fitting too. It was very true to what they were going for.
I'm sorry, that when we first meet Ocelot, that is like it's the best, like the way he comes out just spinning the gun, like, so you're the one that the boss keeps talking about.
Yeah.
And then that was like the first time I like learned about a gun. He's like, the Colt single action army, the greatest handgun ever made. One bullet, enough to kill anything that moves. Like, they're just so badass the way it comes out. And he's just like, draw. And then you just get thrown into this battle after a very short, like, it's almost like a Western showdown.
Yeah. No, you know that's what I mean? Exactly.
Like, they're both standing across from each other. Draw after he comes out and he's got the, I don't know what
they continue that in 3 too. Yeah. Like, they kind of add to it when they have him in more of the story, which I like. It's like his style, you know.
It's one of the quickest, but one of my favorite boss battles.
The characterization of him was brilliant. Yeah, it took that, you know, spaghetti Western style. It put him in a universe, in a scenario where that character doesn't belong.
Yeah.
And because of that, he stood out.
It's like an American cowboy that was once in working with the Russians, and like, just like, I don't know.
It's such strong characterization.
But it was also so believable.
Right.
Like, it was fascinating.
Yeah.
Actually, one thing I pulled up here, one to kind of, you know, give us an idea of the order of the bosses, but also to you know, help refresh memory a little bit and kind of get into it. I actually pulled up a boss FAQ back when the internet was first, you know, a thing, after the 1-900 numbers. You know, we had game facts where, you know, you go on and there's like this like 30 page text how to beat those. So I pulled those up, and I'm even looking at Vulcan Ravens. We can kind of go back to that. But yeah, so here's what it says for Ocelot. This is pretty much the same for all difficulty levels, and no one should have trouble with it. The only real concern is running out of ammo. There are three ammo boxes, each with 12 shots in them. Only pick up one if you have 13 shots or less in your SOCOM, so that you get the full 12 from them all. Stay on the outside, being careful not to trip the wire that's holding Baker. Follow Ocelot around. Yeah, because you kill him, and that's game over right there. Follow Ocelot around and stay alert while he still has bullets in his gun. While he's reloading is the easiest time to hit him, but don't be afraid to hit him at other times as well. Watch out for the ricocheting bullets, as they will probably cause you the most trouble.
I would have known that the first time I got there. It literally killed me.
And then just kind of moving on to Raven, since we talked about that a little
another
bit.
Another badass intro, too.
Right.
Just comes out in that tank.
So, and this is reminding me of a lot of stuff I missed. You know, it's, you know, starts telling you to... I completely forgot about this. You have to wear the thermal goggles to see where there's mines all over the place.
After you... when I first started playing the game, like now if I play it now, before I even get to that cutscene, I'm like laying down and collecting them all. But then I learned after a while, because I would run out and then get hit by the missile. Before you even get out from behind the rock, if you just throw a chaff grenade, it jams the system.
Right.
And then you can just like, once you get over that, but yeah, the mines, it's like, but when you're first playing that, you don't know.
Yeah.
You get that call from Deep Throat is his name. Which later ends up just being the ninja.
Yeah.
But he, like, warned you about it, but still, like, you're like, ugh. And then you probably just run in and get exploded right away. But, yeah, I mean, that is just, like, and it was the one, like, you beat him, but you really didn't. Like,
yeah.
You beat him just, like, he didn't stop you that time.
Right.
So it put this thing in the back of your head, like, I just played the first two the first two bosses, and they're still alive, but they're still moving. Like, am I going to meet these people again?
Yeah. After that, we actually had the Cyborg Ninja the next boss. This one, like, going back to, you know, playing that, this was like the scariest fucking lead up to a boss. I think. So you're going through, you're trying to find Otacon at this point in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you walk through the hallway, and out of nowhere, there's just suddenly like blood smeared all over the hallways and these just like crumpled bodies on the ground. And there's this eerie red lighting and
noise too. No music, no nothing, just that noise.
Brilliantly put together.
Yeah.
And then you walk in. I don't remember at one point you walk in, what triggers the Cyborg Ninja to come out. I remember throwing frag grenades at him, but like he, you know.
Just exploded them.
Well, no, they would stop him and they would freeze him.
Oh, but the chat?
He would get mad at you and like. Try to get you to quote unquote fight fair. Let me read up on it here. So this was a CQC fight.
Yeah, I think it's one of the hardest boss battles in that game, besides the fight at the end on top.
Yeah, I remember having trouble with it, but I also really liked it.
When I went back and played it this past year, like a few months ago, I died like 5 times, and I was playing on normal. I'm just like, I forgot the sequence to beat him, because like you get close to him and he does like this almost cartwheel sidekick thing.
Yeah.
But I would always get caught with that. But then before I get up, he's hitting me again. So I figured if you get near him and then you run away, but then if you take the chaff grenades, that disables him.
That's and why then I you liked can it get too, free. Though. It was one of those boss battles where like you really had to learn, you know, their moves and their strategy, and you kind of have to work with it. And even when you learn it, it's still a challenge.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah, no, he was definitely a creepy boss, and the next one's even creepier. What was it in his? It wasn't with his fight with you where he lost his arm, right?
Which one?
It wasn't in that first fight.
Who?
The Cyborg Ninja.
Oh, he loses it at the end against Metal Gear. He gets pinned up against the wall.
That's right.
And he lasers it off.
I thought he was missing the arm at that point.
No, he was just a revised ninja at that time.
Like, he cuts it off himself, too, right?
Yeah, he gets hurt, and then he sent him with his sword, and he cuts it off to destroy the radome. And
yeah.
Another good scene, but we'll get to that one.
Right. So from there, we have, you know, the boss we started talking about, Psycho Mantis. He can actually... I don't know what made them think of... He can read your mind, so you have to change the controller port.
Yeah, so creative. I always loved that.
I remember just the confusion that it probably must have caused. I know it caused me, but anybody playing that game for the first time, like, as far as I know, like, I haven't played every single game in the world, but did you know of any other game that did anything like that ever?
Nothing like that.
Read your memory card with certain files on it, like I was telling you earlier about Castlevania. If you had that on there, he'd point that out. Or if you didn't save often, he'd be like, oh, you don't save often. Or, oh, you're very careful. You save often. Like, they knew, you know what I mean? Like, in Metal Gear 2, they tell you to turn off the game. Like, dude, should I? Like, do I really? Like, they just make you think, you know?
It makes it feel so much more interactive.
Right.
Yeah.
And then there was something with the busts in the room, right? Because they were his face.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had masks, you shot the masks off?
Yeah, you shoot the mask, and I think something would happen where, like, they would change, and then you shoot them a certain amount of times, and then you destroy them. But, like, there'd be a couple... You shoot them, and then it would do something else, and then you shoot them again, there'd be no mask, and then I think you shoot them again, and then it's gone. I haven't done that one in a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think. Because there was nothing else in the... Like, I just remember all the pictures and everything, and I think it's when you're there doing the fight, the masks are on all the statues, and the pictures are weird. And then, after you go forward, and you come back with the sniper rifle, because you have to go all the way back to where you, to the armor. For your first boss battle to get the sniper rifle. And when you come back, I think when you go back, everything's normal. I'm vague on it, right?
Yeah.
But, it's one of those things. I'm sure maybe somebody listening is like, no, you
guys. Oh, I'm sure, yeah. And then, you know, just the creepy aspects of it where he starts mind-controlling Meryl.
Oh,
yeah.
That sudden rush to, like, it's going to sound bad, but kick the shit out of her until she's stunned so she doesn't blow her head off.
Right.
I figured that just throw a stun grenade and she'll go right out. I never knew that until, like, later, because it was just something that I didn't think about. That's what I loved about those parts in the game is, like, it got you so into the game that you'd forget to plug your controller back into the first port. You know what I mean? Like, it just takes your mind away from everything else, and you're just focused in. It's like, put controller back in port one. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Crap.
That's funny.
Yeah.
And then, so, after we beat... Psycho Mantis, you know, the next boss is Sniper Wolf.
Yeah.
You leave out of the back door in the office, and I think Meryl gets shot.
Yeah, not even 5 minutes after. Like,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
There was no space there. Like, you go through the wolf cave, and you can get diazepam there and stuff like that to keep your... They give you that before you even get the sniper rifle. You can get it in a couple locations leading up to that point. But, yeah, that's where Meryl gets shot. And
one of the things I love, if you don't have that, you can actually smoke a cigarette to keep the
Really? I never even tried.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. If you're in a sniper and you're out of it and you're swaying too much, you can smoke a cigarette while you're doing it, and that calms him down, and you can actually hold.
I'm literally just going to go home, play that, get to there, and just do that.
Do it.
Sounds so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. You can smoke a cigarette to keep the gun from swaying and to calm yourself.
Actually, just not to get too far off track, but I learned this glitch. Well, not learned. I looked it up. I think it's like Did You Know Gaming, Son of a Glitch, it's called, where they tell you, they just go through these, like, 20-minute long, every game you could think of, they go through it and check everything. But there's one, like, where right when you're about to climb up the ladder to go into the first vent of the DARPA chief, there's a vent, like, on the ground. If you back half your body into there and, like, hold up and triangle on the pad, it'll glitch you out, and then you can walk around and get all the way to the torture scene.
Oh, wow.
With the DARPA chief.
Wow.
And you can literally, that's what, because I got into, like, this speedrunning thing, and I looked that up. I was like, whoa. And sure enough, I did it in this game, and yeah, it worked perfect. But then, like, they came out with, like, a new Essentials Collection, which is, like, the bigger, like, it's like a PS2, but a PS1 version of this with 2 and 3. And you can't, as far as I know, I couldn't do it in that one. You can only do it in this game. And it gets you all the way to the torture scene, which we'll get to. That's another good... They're all so good. Every time one comes up, I'm like, oh, this is so good. Oh, this is so good.
Now with... So Sniper Wolf was I can't think of any other sniper battle in a video game before this one either.
Yeah, no.
That's one thing I really liked about it.
You only saw those at, like, arcades with, like, you know... sniper scopers, you know what I mean? Yeah. All stuff like that.
Yeah,
like
you'd
that
have,
was
like,
just
a toy gun you'd aim at the arcade machine.
Yeah, I just got that like Time Crisis or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember, of course, but yeah, I can't think of any other one. And you literally, there was no other way that you could beat that part. You had to go get the sniper rifle.
Right.
Every time you tried to walk forward, she'd shoot you.
I don't think you couldn't actually see her, could you? Through the sniper?
Yeah, so someone looked it up at that son of a glitch. They looked it up, and that beam that she's pointing at you does extend all the way, and you can see her, like, if you just do first person, if she doesn't shoot you by the time you try to figure out where she is. But yeah, I think you could see her. But at first, before that cutscene starts, she's not there. She just pops in right when you...
Right,
you know what I mean. It initiates the cutscene, and that's when she's there.
And that's when she's there. So you can't get the drop on her.
Right, exactly. You can't just like, oh, Meryl, wait right here, and then just leave her there. I've never done that actually. Maybe you just go. I'm sure they would be like, it would be like game over or something. Like Meryl died or whatever. I never tried to do that.
So after Sniper Wolf, that's when we get to the torture scene.
Yeah, we get captured. After you shoot her like 10 times with a sniper rifle, she's still perfectly alive. That's why I love video games. Just that it's like, it was like the game is realistic, but nobody would really survive 10. You know what I mean? It's like it was, but it wasn't. But yeah, they set you up and they drag you away.
I think we need to have some real talk here.
Yeah.
Nobody has ever actually beaten that torture thing by pressing... normally, right?
Oh, no. I'm sure everyone's had to, like, modify, like, the way they press a button to do that.
So what I did that works, I would take a pen, and I would just rub the O button back and forth.
Really?
Yeah.
It worked?
And that would work. They thought really far ahead on this, too. They disabled any... There were controllers back then where you can actually automate button pressing. And have it press it like infinitely faster
with
than
the turbo switches and stuff.
So they actually did it where you could not use those controllers. If you pressed it too fast, the game would know that it's not a human doing it.
It would just drop the bar
and it
anyway.
Would do it like you weren't pressing anything.
Oh man. Yeah. And it was that part too, like there's consequences. Like if you haven't saved often and you die in that torture scene, like you're screwed. They'll throw you all the way back to your last save, I think it is. Or if you give up, Meryl dies. And if you pass, Meryl lives. So that's the choice beginning. That's basically where you pick, do I want the stealth or the bandana? If Meryl dies, you get the stealth. If Meryl lives, you get the bandana.
That's right. So, you get a stealth suit where you can just basically play invisible for the
entire
game.
Run up behind people and put C4 on them and then watch them explode.
That was another thing that they kind of did ahead of their time, too. Like, they gave you the option to make choices in the story.
Yeah.
Right. And the bandana was infinite ammo, right?
Yep.
That's so awesome.
And then, the third time you beat it, when you go in the elevator at the very start, you have the tuxedo, right?
Yep.
I think it's two or three times. Like a James Bond Easter egg.
Yep. Which, and I mean, goes back to, like, a lot of this was based off of James Bond. All right, so after the torture scene, we then have the Hind. I don't remember this one well, so...
Oh, I got you covered, buddy.
All right, cool. I'm gonna have to wait on you for this one.
You actually you get introduced to the Hind before the actual battle after you...
So, what was the Hind? I don't remember what the Hind was.
The Hind D was a big helicopter.
Yeah, and you were in talks with Gerlukovich about... So, Ocelot, I think, was going to sell Metal Gear Solid. Or Metal Gear Solid, oh my god.
Metal Gear Gods.
Just slap me now.
Metal Gear Rex?
Yeah, Metal Gear Rex. Yeah. He was in talks with, like, selling it, I think, to Grulukovich because he needed it for his army. So the Hein was a gift from Grulukovich as a down payment, basically, for that. So he's just flying around in it at that time. But once you get out of the torture room and you make your way up and you go all the way up and you meet Otacon at the elevator that's not working and he's got to fix it while you go and you take on the Hind. But before all that, I got kind of mixed up, but you climb up and you're trying to cross over the bridge to the communications tower. You have to go up and then down to get to the underground maintenance base where Metal Gear is being stored. And when you get to the top and you're about to cross the bridge, he comes and shoots missiles and destroys the communications towers and the bridge, so you can't go across. You have this rope that you collect in a certain part, and you jump and you rappel down this thing. And they make it into this big thing where they call you, "Hey, Snake, here's how to rappel. Press the action button and drop down."
And you even have the instructions.
Yep. When you want to rappel. But yeah, once you get through there. But then, like, once you get down to the building and you turn around, there's three guards that you have to take out. And then once you get past them and then you run up and turn the corner, the Hind comes and shoots at you again. You get into the door that's right there. And then that's where you get the stinger. And then you lead up. And then you fight him on that other side. And he dies, but somehow parachutes out of a helicopter with blades in it.
No one actually dies in this game.
No, I don't think so. I think probably the only person's the DARPA chief.
Yeah. Or
decoy.
Yeah. So after that, we actually get the rematch with Sniper Wolf.
Yep.
Another good one. So this is the one where you're in the snow.
Yeah.
Right, and you're...
You pretty much have only a tree for cover.
Yeah.
That you lay next to. But now I'm lazy and I just run all the way to the right and fire all the Nikita missiles.
That's what I did.
Yeah. But yeah, when you play it the first time, some people probably didn't think of that. And I would just lay by the tree and she'd run back and forth. And it was like one of the longer ones because like you could lose her really quick and all that. But then after you beat her, it's one of the best scenes, I think, out of that whole entire franchise is that Sniper Wolf after she dies, and then the conversation that Otacon and Snake have at the end where, I don't know, just like, you know, what are we fighting for? You know, it's like, when we get through this, I'll tell you. Right? Just all that stuff. It's just like, that was one of the first scenes in a game that made me emotional. Like, you almost felt bad for Sniper Wolf after you killed her.
Yeah, you definitely did. She was very human at the end of that.
Yeah. Just like under the circumstances that she was brought up in, she didn't have any other life that she could live other than the one that she was committed to. It's just like, I must feel bad for Otacon, and like I could never understand why he liked her. Everyone he liked died in that series anyway, so poor Otacon.
He knew how to pick them.
Exactly.
So after that Sniper Wolf battle, that second one, we actually have to change discs because this is 1998 and games don't fit on one CD.
I definitely was not playing Final Fantasy then, so I think that game had like four, but that's
all. Oh, God, yeah, yeah.
Crazy big, but yeah, yep, you go right before you go to the Blast Furnace.
The next boss fight, though, is one that I didn't actually remember until a moment ago when I was reading up on it.
It's second Raven one?
Yes, the one where he's walking around with the minigun?
Yeah.
There's another Easter egg before you change discs after you beat Sniper Wolf. When you're going and you're collecting like all the stuff from, there's like a bunch of little storage rooms.
Yeah.
There's actually a parachute in the tree. And Snake calls Campbell and goes, "I found a parachute near the wreckage of the Hind D." And Colonel's like, these are actual quotes, by the way, "You don't think it could be?" And then they start talking about whatever. And he goes, "What do you think it means?" Colonel says. And he goes, Snake's like, "Maybe it means I'll string you up." Like, he says it all weird like that. You know what I mean? And then they're just like, "Oh, whatever." And that's when you have this inkling that, man, Liquid could still be alive. And he is, because he's playing Master Miller at the same time, which we didn't mention that. You had this old Master Miller who was, you know, worked alongside Big Boss and is now a retiree or whatever, you know. But Yeah, he's playing Miller the whole time.
Liquid is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't even know it until the very, very, very end of the game.
Right. Yeah. I never knew that, actually. I never went and found the parachute. Yeah.
Yeah. It's there. It's crazy.
So after that, we get to the second disc. We've got Vulcan Raven. It's like a maze. It's like a boiler room maze.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm trying to remember some of the strategy.
Oh, the actual boss battle. First you get to that boiler area, but where you fight him, it's like bone-chilling cold. You go up these two elevators. And I can't remember if it's up or down. That's when you find out Naomi's the one that injected you with fox dye.
Yes.
It's either right before that or right after that, because you have to heat the... We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm just pulling up the facts on it just to see.
You have a square. You're basically fighting him in a square, and then it has nine other squares. It's like 5x5x5x5.
It's like a cross pattern, right? Like,
yeah.
Cross,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like you're playing a giant Connect Four or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know
like a just common vertical and horizontal.
Like a grid.
Squaring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a grid.
Yeah.
That, I don't know why I couldn't think of that word. Yeah, and that one you have to use like claymores and stuff, right? You got to plant them around.
Claymores, C4, and I use the stinger a lot.
The stinger,
I would follow him. But then when his patterns get kind of sporadic, like I learned, the first side will come from the side and just go down the sides and then run and then go down the sides. And then when you hit him a certain amount of times, then he'll start doing like, he'll go vertical. And then he starts going all like in and out. I'm still trying to figure out the patterns. But then while you're doing all that, you have to dodge he shoots these big containers down and they fall down. And they drop items for you like ration or a stinger missile or whatever.
Yeah.
Because one time I'm standing there. And I'm just, like, hiding from him, and I hear the whole thing moving, and I'm just not registering in my head, and it falls on me and kills me. I had, like, no life left, and it hit me, and I was, like, dead. And that's another long boss battle. If you don't, even me, I've beaten that game literally probably 500 times, seriously. I've played it so many times, yeah.
I mean, you have the entire thing memorized.
Memorized, yeah.
I can't even count how many times I've personally seen him beat it.
Like, I make it a mount to beat it once a year now, just because.
I think maybe four for me.
Yeah. Oh, I wish.
I'd say about three or four for me. Unless you count Twin Snakes. If you're counting that as its own, though, it's been about three or four times I beat the original.
Yeah. I don't know why I... Yeah, I could... I don't know. Just one of those games I loved it so much.
I think it's one of those games that just kind of presses your nostalgia button.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's got that little button in there that, like, there's certain things that, like, make you feel things from when you were a kid. It just brings back the emotions and puts you back in that mindset and that frame of time. I think, you know, this is one of those.
I also think it's a creative and deep enough game in so many ways where it still kind of translates to today. Like the graphics may be, you know, very old school, but
they still
the gameplay
up.
Itself. Yep, the gameplay itself too is just still like, holds up and everything.
Yeah, everyone has that certain thing that's had that impact on them, and like you'll never forget it. Like I remember the day I went and got the game. Like my mom took me to Walmart. We went in the one in the Cromwell. Remember how you'd walk in and all the games are like on the right?
Yeah,
and you could play. So she puts it in the cart, and she's like, you can't touch it. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And I'm like, okay. And I put it in the cart, flipped over, just so I can, like, watch the back. And I'm like, oh, I'll push the cart. She's like, you never want to push the cart. And I'm just pushing the thing. And then we get home, and she was like, all right, you got to go to bed. You can't play it. And I literally just stayed up until she went to bed and played it all the way until I had to go to school. It was so good. But, yeah, anyway, and the Vulcan fight. Vulcan Raven, that's where you find out about, well, if you put it all together at that time, that's when you find out about Decoy Octopus playing. That's where they give you that hint, like, you know, they don't have the codes. You are putting in the codes.
Yeah.
It's just like, you don't know it yet. And I feel like it's almost like they blatantly tell you, but just people still didn't know. Like, Such a good twist.
I feel like the further you get to the end, too, the quicker they throw the boss battles at you. Like, so there's less play in between bosses.
Let's assume that, you know, anyone listening hasn't played. Explain all of that, right?
That
plot point about how Solid Snake has information that they need.
Yeah, so basically Psycho Mantis comes up with the idea in the beginning, like, before you even get there. Ocelot has the actual DARPA chief in the torture room and accidentally kills him during the torture. And they're like, in that scene, they're like, what are we going to do? And Psycho Mantis is like, boss, I have a good idea. And then it just goes blank. So basically what happens is Psycho Mantis tells Decoy Octopus, become the DARPA chief. We'll get these, you know, snake to come in and, like, you know, give them this, like, bogus mission. It's so much. Oh, my God. Basically, and Campbell's in on it, too.
Right.
Colonel Campbell knows everything. They set you up.
And this is why we have Liquid as Master Miller.
Yep, exactly. And, I'm trying to not get too tied up. Because
Campbell eventually glitches out, right? And that becomes a huge hint to what's going on.
That's Metal Gear Solid 2.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. He's not real in that one. But basically... I think Campbell is just aware of the fact that they were going to inject him with Fox Dye. They had Meryl, which at the time you only think is his niece, but Meryl is actually Colonel Campbell's daughter. So he is forced to comply with them. So he has to set up Snake to have him come in and put in these PAL codes so they can launch this nuke. And basically the organization you're up against tricks you into thinking that they have the detonation codes when they don't. So when you get the key from a person that they couldn't get it from, and you go and you put in the codes, it actually activates, it activates Metal Gear, and that's when the twist gets brought to light. So you basically, it's just like a big setup to get you, to get them to where they need to be. I almost feel like I'm not telling it the right way.
No.
There's so much stuff.
There is a lot. Oh, spoiler warning, by the way.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't beaten this game, like, you know, 25, 30 years ago.
Right. You're kind of late anyway, so, yeah. You know.
I mean, I don't know why someone would listen to a podcast on a game that they haven't played, too. You would expect a lot of information to be on it.
I'm guessing our pure sexual animal magnetism.
Yeah. I believe it. Chicago Bowl.
So that actually leads us to our next boss. We actually have Metal Gear Rex, and this is kind of where I mentioned the scene where the cyborg ninja comes out, loses his arm.
Frank Yeager.
There's technically two rounds of facing Rex there too. It's kind of split up in two parts.
Yeah, destroying the manual one, and then afterward, like, Liquid takes control of it manually, right?
Yeah. So he's closed in. So you can't see him. He's controlling it fully with, like, you know, all the sensor or whatever. I don't know the whole inside of it or whatever. But, yeah, he's controlling it that way, and you destroy the radar that gives him the ability to see where you are. So he has to open up, and that's where you're, like, shooting him with Stinger missiles at point, basically right underneath him. And then he still survives that, and you end up.
Yeah, it leads to a sexy shirtless boxing match on top of Metal Gear.
I always liked that it was on top of Metal Gear, too.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really fun aspect.
So good.
And how you can knock each other off a little, like, hang off the edge, and you have to try and... You know what I mean? It was just really fun.
It was hard, too.
Yeah.
It's one of the more frustrating ones, especially after he starts doing the roundhouse kicks, and then he does, like, these, like, almost, like... Like a defensive football player on the line on a snap. Like, he just runs at you and spears you and you just slide off. But yeah. Meanwhile, Meryl's in the background with a. You have 3 minutes to do that, by the way. No matter what.
Oh, that's right. It's timed.
Yeah.
And then you have that. The car chase.
Yep.
After. So you beat Liquid in Metal Gear Rex, and then the jaw opens up and he's. Firing it manually, you beat him there, and then you beat him in a sexy boxing match on top of Metal Gear Rex, and then, like, he's chasing you, and you're in the Jeep with Meryl, if she lived.
Yeah.
Or Otacon, if you...
Right.
Which, actually, I have a question. I don't know if you would know this, just because you know so much. which version is the actual true canon version?
It has to be the Meryl
surviving, yeah.
Yeah, because
they don't bomb the place, it gets canceled, so Otacon lives no matter what.
Okay, that's what I was wondering. That's why it confused me.
They just give you that option, too, because I'm sure they wanted to provide two different endings for the game, and it's a good way to give you stealth.
Yeah, the way they did it was fantastic. I thought it was perfect.
But yeah, Meryl coming back in 4, right, means that has to be the...
That's what made me realize, because I realized both characters were used later on.
Right.
So if one was left behind and it was going to be bombed, you know what I mean?
That's after the first game, too, they left Meryl in the dark. You don't hear anything of her in the second game at all.
I think not even an Easter egg, really, right?
I think nothing. Campbell may bring her up.
Really?
Once.
But like completely, I might not even be remembering that right, but like just a completely off the cuff like mention, not anything.
Yeah. And then she comes out of nowhere in 4 as one of the main characters of the game.
Right.
Yeah. I can't wait to do that one. Metal Gear 4.
Metal Gear 4 is such a mindfuck, and it's fantastic.
Yeah. I literally just discovered this. There's like a handprint camo square that you can follow these little hamsters to. I was just like, one day, I'm like, I'm bored. I've beaten this game a bunch of times. Let me follow these hamsters. And they brought me all the way to like this. There's these handprints and this like
logic.
3x3 block. And you lay down on it, and it's hands camo. It's insane. But yeah, that's what happens when I get bored of Metal Gear Solid video games. I just follow hamsters around and find little true cool gamer. Easter eggs. Yeah. Check off another camo on the camo index. That's another... Oh, man, I can't wait to get into that. Because that was... you're almost like a... What are those ones that can change a reptile? They can change...
Chameleon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like after Metal Gear 3 and 4, that you're like a chameleon. You can blend into anything.
Right. It's so fun and interesting. More intense, too. You can get closer to people without getting caught. So it would just be more tricky and intense, in my opinion. Yeah. I liked it.
Let me ask you this, because I mean we've actually gone through the entire game at this point.
Yeah.
Or at least the boss fights in the game. There's definitely some things in between that we maybe, you know, actually before we get to this, like any Easter eggs we missed? Anything?
No, like if or a little bit. I mean, I don't know if you'd consider when in the beginning of the game when you get. You're about to get to Ocelot. You're about to blow the wall to see them. Like, because if you look in, you can see Baker held up there before you even walk in and initiate the cutscene. But there's a little, like, a blast wall, a wall you can blast to the right. But there's a level 6 card there that you have. And obviously, you don't even have the second one yet, so you can't get in there. But when you go back to get the sniper rifle, if you go back, there's a camera in there, and then if you take that camera, when you go through, you can take pictures in certain areas, and there's ghost faces.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, yep. And
I
then
didn't know about that.
And they used the camera when they did the remake Twin Snakes also.
Yep.
Also, same thing. If you go in there, Baker, when he's in the room with Ocelot, and you back out 3 times, when you come back, he's not wearing pants.
Really?
No.
I never knew that.
No, that's not true.
Oh. I mean. You got me.
That would have been amazing. I would have been like, oh my God, let's go find out.
Well, it's funny because it's believable.
Yeah. With that game, I wish I could be a fly on the wall in that meeting where they're like, what should we do? Like, you come up to Meryl, you back out, you go back in, she'll be doing another exercise. All right, you do it 3 more times. She's doing another exercise. Yes, and then without pants. Like the creepy guy just stood up in the room. Let's take her pants off.
I wonder if it's like they came up with that, and I'm like, well, what are they going to have them through? What are we going to have them do the 3rd time they walk in? And then like maybe like, you know, a few hours goes by, and he just comes in. Fuck it, don't give her any pants, and shuts the door. Like, okay, whatever.
That's not even the only part in the game where you can get pantsless Meryl.
Yeah, the other one is where you go meet her as she's dressed up.
You have
before Psycho Mantis.
You have to. This is the best part. I don't know how we pass this. It's the best part of the game where Meryl is disguised as a soldier, and you have to check out the soldiers' asses.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Find which the swaying one is one
that makes funny. that makes this noise when she walks. I almost want to look it up, but if she notices you and you stay close to her and you follow her all the way to the back thing, she'll just be in her underwear and a tank top.
There was a lot of little things. Like, I don't know if the original had this, but I know that the Twin Snakes had, like, there were all these hidden posters of girls in bikinis that you could take pictures of with the camera that they give you in the game. like they were hidden in lockers, and you'd have to stand in certain spots and look at different directions and zoom in with the camera. But there was like all these hidden little posters around the game.
They did that in 2 also. Yeah.
Yeah, because Twin Snakes was like, it was like the original, but with the gameplay and graphics of 2.
Of 2, yeah.
It was amazing. I loved it.
So, to kind of wind this down, since we've gone through the entire game and there's pizza upstairs waiting for us.
Ooh.
So, we'll start with you, Jesse. On the
the
whole, not getting too much into the other games, but in the entire catalog of the Metal Gear Solid games, where does this one rank for
first?
You? It's number one?
Just because it has like a special place in my heart, as like it was like the really the first game I like beat. It was like the first game I spent time with and got to know the characters and like the story and just, I don't know, it just, I feel like, because without this game we don't get the other ones, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it just, I feel like it was ahead of its time. It set the bar for games to come. It gave us cool, like, Splinter Cell, and there's other ones I'm missing. But I just felt like it was just one of those games that it changed everything. And just, like, from a standpoint of, like, story and, like, it's like the good guy always wins, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's double crossing, there's lies, there's deceiving, there's like, you know, relationship, there's just, it has everything.
Like, even if you win, it's not necessarily a happy ending. There's so much more to the story than just the basic hero.
Like, imagine like, because like you said, there's no YouTube or anything. Imagine like not like giving up to that torture because you couldn't do it, and then having Meryl die. That gives a whole different dynamic to the end of the game.
Right. Yeah. That's how it happened for me the first time I played.
Cause yeah, I didn't.
You cannot humanly press it that fast. I'm sorry.
Not at 12, 13 years old. No way.
So she died on me the first time, and yeah, I completely agree, and it made me play the game a second time.
Yeah.
Because I was not going to fail that second time. Definitely. And that's where I figured out the pen thing.
Oh, cool, yeah. I used to have to, like, put it on the floor, and I, like, until that's I got lightheaded.
The one finger, where you just...
Yeah, because you're, like, holding your breath, and I'm like, oh, she's going to live, and you're looking up at the bar, but you don't want to look up at the bar, because you're going to miss the circle button. And
I think for me, this is probably my second favorite.
Yeah?
Out there, yeah. The only one I'd put... And, I mean, it's close.
Yeah.
The only one I'd think to put ahead of it might be Snake Eater.
Oh, my God, yes. That's probably, like...
Right, they're like 1A.
They're 1 and
B.
2, yeah. 1A, 1B, yeah. I like that better than 1 and 2. It's just like, just put a comma next to it for me. Like, that's just personally.
What about you, Dean?
I think if you're including it as separate from Snake Eater, or not Snake Eater, Twin Snakes, then I would say it's second, and Twin Snakes is 1.
Okay.
But if you're including it in the same, because it's technically is the same game, then it's probably my first.
Yeah, because like the GameCube one version, so like it looks better, it's polished.
Right. Yeah, like it was such an amazing remake. Like the redo of it is fantastic.
Did I don't know if I like just missed it, but it's like embarrassing. I don't care though. Like for a while, you know how like when you would stop and shoot. You can only stop and shoot. Like, I didn't know that you could point the gun and then hold X and then run with it out for a while.
Yeah.
Like, a while. I was, like, mad.
I mean, but like we said before, this was a blueprint game. There was nothing, you know, there's nothing that came before it that would say, like, you can do this in
the,
a game.
The button layout was unusual, too.
It was.
It was, like, what, circle to accept and
stuff
like that?
Yeah,
like,
and that took me forever to...
Triangle.
Yeah.
Triangle was the action button. Circle was the hit button. X was the... crawl.
But even in menus, you know, I think that's what Dean was saying.
It's
like circle to start the game instead of X, where it would be in like 100%. I'm not even going to say 90% of other games. It was 100% of every other game. You pressed X to start the game.
Or start.
This is funny.
We're usually X.
When I bought the Switch, he's giving me the box and he goes, oh, just be careful. It's not like other consoles. When you want to accept something, you have to hit the B button. I was like, which one's a B button? And he's like, oh, the one on the right. And I'm like, oh, I play Metal Gear Solid like my whole life. Like, that's going to be no problem to get used to.
B stands for back, though.
Yeah.
Right.
O
stands for oh, no.
So when they finally made it at, like, I think Metal Gear 3 is like that. But when they redid the versions and they made it X to, like, select your like where he needed to go. I was like almost disappointed. Like I always I always expected it to be circle.
I think it's weird that it was always circle, but I do think they should have kept it that way. They should have been like, you know what, that's the way we did it. People got used to it. That's how it is.
Yeah.
But all right, I think that's a good place to stop as any.
Definitely.
Thank you for joining us on our first episode down this rabbit hole of video games. And join us next week when we talk about Barbie Dreamland, the video game.
Game of the year.